You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. For the rest of the hour, a look at a new type of antibiotic. You know about bacteria that make you sick, right? Salmonella. You've heard that more and more bacteria are becoming resistant to antibiotics? Sure. But have you heard about a bacterium that can kill disease-causing bugs, other bacteria, even when antibiotics cannot? The miracle microbe is Bordetella vibrio. This little guy swims around looking for its prey and then squeezes inside the victim's cell wall. And once inside, it uses nutrients from the host to grow and multiply. And then the new Bordetella vibrio, it bursts out of the dead host cell to go and find some more stuff to eat. Now think of the possibilities. Life-threatening infections cured, biohazardous waste cleaned up, pure water from sewage, and pure air from air conditioners. Well, now scientists, if that news isn't good enough, have sequenced the genome of the bacteria that can kill other disease-causing bacteria, even when antibiotics cannot. And joining me now to talk about it is my guest, Stefan Schuster. He's the author of this week's paper in the journal Science describing Bordetella vibrio genome sequence. And he is the leader of the Genomics and Signal Transduction Research Group at the Max Planck Institute for Developmental Biology in Germany. And he joins us from his home. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Schuster.
Hi, how are you?
It eats their guts out, so to speak, huh? Is that how it works?
Well, bacteria don't exactly have a gut, but once it makes its way inside, it really knows what to do. And it won't stop until the job is done.
What stops it from then wreaking havoc on everything?
I think it has, it's the usual population dynamics. Wherever you have a predator and you have a prey, they're basically depending on one another. If you have too many predators, then there's soon too little prey. If there's too little prey, you soon will have too little predators. And this is the natural balance that you would find just in any ecosystem, whether this is with lions and zebras or with bacteria, it's basically the same.
Is this a rare bacterium, or is it found everywhere, even in our own guts?
That's a good question. I would say it's the most ubiquitous in the free environment. So where it was originally discovered was in the soil, but it's also found in sewage and in brackish water. And there are several reports where the bacterium was found in the intestines of animals and also of humans.
And how does it find out? How does it seek out its prey?
It has, it's like, it's a recognition mechanism that's similar to the key and the keyhole. It basically needs to attach, in order to attack, it needs to attach to the outside of the bacterium. And if this bacterium is not adhesive, then it cannot make its assault. And it uses at one side, so basically at its attack pole, it uses long fibers. And those fibers have a gluey end. And this gluey end is then sticking onto the surface of the prey bacteria. And this is then how it hulls itself into the close vicinity of its prey.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Of course, it must prefer some bacteria over others. Some are more tasty than the other ones.
So to speak, there are many different Bordetella vibrio strains known, and some of them prey only on a sole other bacteria, food bacterium, and there are other Bordetella vibrio strains known that would then endure like a whole range of different bacteria. And so both is possible. You have like a wide range, or you have a very specific prey.
And so could you, can you then tailor make, now that you've deciphered the genome of this bacterium, can you tailor make it a little bit?
This is exactly what we're aiming for. I mean, we want to understand exactly how this attachment mechanism works, what is the adhesive molecule, and then, of course, we could fine-tune this adhesive molecule that it would only single out those bacteria that you want to defeat.
And what would be some tasty targets for this bacterium if you could tailor-make it?
I think it's very important to note that Bordetella vibrio cannot prey on all the bacteria. The two classes, so the two hemispheres of the bacterial kingdom are the gram-positive and the gram-negative bacteria. And the gram-negative, they have two membranes. And having two membranes is basically a prerequisite. Delovibrio can only eat bacteria with two membranes. And those include the very well-known Escherichia coli, for example, the Salmonella, very important for infection, but also Pseudomonas, which is important for lung diseases, wound healing. But also, you mentioned air conditioning system, their Legionella really is a problem. And this is like the kind of bacteria that you want to go after.
That was Legionnaire's disease bacteria.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So could it be as simple as making, you know, growing this bacteria in the laboratory and loading up a hypodermic needle and giving you a shot of it, or would it work like that?
Well, that would be fantastic if it did. But I think we basically are at the very beginning of developing these techniques. And as usual, it will take many years until we are absolutely sure that this is also safe to do. But I think in principle, the most potent agent would be using the Delovibrio as a living organism. And in a way to make it more controllable, you could also think about only using those components from the Delovibrio that are antimicrobial agents. And when we analyzed the genome, we found that Delovibrio has an unusual high number of enzymes with an lytic activity, which means they are able to degrade proteins, DNA, RNA, and also the lipids. Mm-hmm. And one could imagine that you basically make a very controlled mix of those enzymes, and those you would apply then, for example, for on food, for food safety, or maybe even one day in a sewage plant, so as an additional step for the purification and getting rid of all those germs that accumulate over there, and they exchange all their resistance plasmids.
But, of course, there are those who are going to paint a scenario of a bacterium like this, you know, getting out of the laboratory, and Lord knows what it might wreak havoc on. How do you quell those kinds of fears?
Well, the danger is not that it will get out of the laboratory, because it's from the environment. So.
Uh-huh.
It's something that's really natural. And one of the reasons why we really suggested using Delovibrio was that we could tell from our genomic analysis that it is not capable of infecting animals and humans. So our cells are basically immune against the Delovibrio assault. Delovibrio can only infect other bacteria, but it's not an infecting agent for animals and men.
Can you get a patent on this?
That's a good question. I'm not certain.
Well, I mean, why would a drug company want to develop this if they can't make, you know, billions of dollars on it?
They would have to, as I suggested, like this first proposal, that you would have to identify proteins, peptides from that, and on that you could get a patent.
Uh-huh.
That would certainly work. But, I mean, if you use the whole bacterium, can you patent nature? I mean, can you patent a tree or a whole?
Oh, yes,
completely?
You can. You can patent
for not much longer.
You can patent a corn. You can patent an animal. You know? You genetically modify it, you know. So, yeah. And if you take this and genetically modify it a bit and make it do what you want to do.
Yes, but see, there's a lot of different views on this. I know that in America it might be easier to do this, but the rest of the world, people are more the like that they say that this should be very much controlled on how much nature can be patented.
And I'm trying to understand a little bit more. If this is such a, you know, a wonderful bug that eats other bugs, I mean, this is not a new bacterium. I mean, why hasn't it been used before to, you know, as an antibiotic?
Because people were missing the complete picture. And so the Delovibrio was discovered in 1962 by German professor Heinz Staub, who is now 82 years old. I talked to him this morning. And he isolated it somewhere from the soil. And after that, there were a lot of groups. Of course, the people initially saw that this is an interesting organism. But in order to work with an organism, you have to have a genetic system, so you must be able to manipulate it. And this was not possible until recently. There was a group of Lissacket in the UK who came up with such a system. And the big gain is that we now have the complete information on the physiology of the Delavibrio from our genomic analysis. So now for the first time we can say this organism is missing all the tools it needs to infect humans. It does not have. And we know exactly what food does it take. And, for example, we could show it's not capable of making its own amino acids. So it depends on the amino acids from its prey. And so for the first time, you can come up with final answers in regard to all the abilities of these organisms. And I think this is the big leap in understanding that we made.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's see if we can get a quick phone call in to Scott in Minneapolis. Hi, Scott.
Thanks for having me on. I read an article a couple of years ago, and I think it was a Discover magazine, and it was profiling treatments for infectious diseases using bacteriophages, viruses.
Yes.
Particularly, I think the article featured a clinic in Jordan. Why, I guess, are we looking at, I guess, a new technology when something out there already exists, and how can we get this also out in the public eye, get it looked at?
Yeah, the Russians did a lot of this between the wars, and then antibiotics came around, and it sort of fell out of favor, but it's still useful, is it not?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is very easy. If it would have worked the way people thought it should, we would see a product, but it did not. And I think using a bacteriophage is much too risky because the rate of change is much too fast. So phages have a very high mutation rate, and then you might end up also eradicating the microflora in your gut, for example, which you really wanted to keep. And this is, I think, the approach is wonderful, but Delavibrio is a much, much better tool for that.
And
because
a
bacteria is much better controllable than a phage, and it's much safer to use.
And it's been around forever, just about.
Yes, yes. And have you ever heard of somebody dying from a Delavibrio infection? I mean,
Only on The Simpsons. No, I haven't heard of anybody.
I'm looking forward to that.
I've got a call from Matt Gronig right after this show. So it sounds like it's almost too good to be true. You know, when you say something about something like, you know, whether it's cold fusion or something, I'm not equating it to this. It says, why hasn't somebody made a killing on it? If it's so good, why isn't somebody a millionaire yet with this? How do you answer that?
It's a good question. You also have to recall we are now in the ninth year of analyzing microbial genomes. So the first genome was done by Greg Venter in 1995. And this Delavibrio is about the 150th genome that's been done.
And
you really wonder why did it take so long.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question, because I only have about 30 seconds left. Is there a possibility that this could eat some of the bad bacteria we want to get rid of and then mutate or combine with that bad bacteria and create a really terrible super bacteria?
That was a major concern when we thought about this. But from the genome structure, we could also show that this bacterium has very little tendency to exchange genetic information with other bacteria. So it basically only has its own genes, and the whole arrangement of its genes has not changed in the recent time. And this also makes it an excellent starting point for developing the Delavibrio.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. And we'll be following this closely, and maybe we'll see you on the Riviera in a few years.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. We've been talking with Stephen Schuster. He is an author on this week's science paper describing the Delavibrio genome sequence. He's also the leader of genomics and signal transduction research group at Max Planck there over in Germany. We've run out of time for this week. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello. Here in New York, Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. If you want to send us some email, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can also find Science Friday's Kids Connection there. Also, you can listen on Real Audio or take Science Friday home with you on your Audible.com player. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.